That Shapner, he killed the mafia boss, Abdul Ghani, in his own mansion and put the pieces of his body all around his house. And the Muslims, after that, they are learning how to fear us. I must go now. We will see us before too much time, isn't it? Goodbye, Lin Baba. He ran off through the lanes. I turned away to walk unsmiling into a sudden mood that was anxious and angry and forlorn. And then, as it always did, the city, Bombay, my Mumbai, held me up on the broad back of a nourishing constancy. I found myself at the edge of a devoted crowd, gathered before the new large hut belonging to the Blue Sisters. Men and women stood at the rear of the crowd, while others sat or knelt in a semicircle of soft light at the threshold of the hut. And there in the doorway, framed by halos of lamplight and wreathed about with streamers of blue incense smoke, were the Blue Sisters themselves, radiant, serene, beings of such lambent compassion, such sublime equanimity, that in my broken, exiled heart I pledged to love them, as every man and woman who saw them did. At that moment I felt a tug at my shirt sleeve, and I turned my head to see what seemed to be the ghost of a gigantic smile with a very small man attached to it. The ghost shook me, grinning happily, and I reached out to enclose it in a hug and then bent forward quickly to touch its feet in the traditional greeting to a father or mother. It was Kishan, Prabhakar's father. He explained that he was in the city for a holiday with Rukmabai, Prabhakar's mother, and Parvati, his widow.
Shantaram, he admonished me when I started speaking to him in Hindi. Have you forgotten all your lovely Marathi?
Sorry, father, I laughed, switching to Marathi. I'm just so happy to see you. Where is Rukmabai?
Come,
he answered, taking my hand as if I was a child and leading me through the slum. We arrived at the little group of huts, including my own, that clustered around Kumar's chai shop near the crescent of the sea. Johnny Cigar was there, with Jitendra, Kasim Ali Hussein, and Joseph's wife, Maria.
We were just talking about you, Johnny cried as I shook hands and nodded my greetings. We were just saying that your hut is empty again. And we were remembering the fire on that first day. It was a big one, nah?
It was, I muttered, thinking of Raju and the others who died in that fire.
So, Shantaram,
a voice scolded in Marathi from behind me.
Now you are too big a fellow to speak to your simple village mother.
I swung round to see Rukmabai standing close to us. I bent to touch her feet, but she restrained me and joined her hands together in a greeting. She looked sadder and older within the soft endearments of her smile, and grieving had put a swipe of grey in the black pelt of her hair. But the hair was growing back. The long hair I'd seen falling like a shadow dying was growing back, and there was living hope in the thick upward sweep of it. Then she directed my gaze to the woman in widow's white standing beside her. It was Parvati, and a child, a son, was standing with her. He was clinging to her sari skirt for support. I greeted Parvati, and when I gave my attention to the boy and looked into his face, I was so shocked that my jaw dropped open. I turned to the adults and they all smiled, waggling their heads in the same wonder. For the child was the image of Prabhakar. More than merely resembling him, the boy was the exact duplicate of the man we'd all loved more than any other we knew. And when he smiled at me, it was his smile, Prabhakar's vast, world-encompassing smile that I saw in that small, perfectly round face.
Baby Dijiye,
I asked. Can I hold him? Parvati nodded. I held my arms out to him, and he came to me without protest. What's his name? I asked, jigging the boy on my hip and watching him smile.
Prabhu,
Parvati answered.
We called him Prabhakar.
Oh, Prabhu,
Rukmabai commanded.
Give Shantaram uncle a kiss.
The boy kissed me on the cheek, quickly, and then wrapped his tiny arms around my neck with impetuous strength and squeezed me. I hugged him in return and held him to my heart.
You know, Shantu,
Kishan suggested, patting at his round belly and smiling to fill the world.
Your house is empty. We are all here. You could stay with us tonight. You could sleep here.
Think hard, Lin,
Johnny Sagar warned, grinning at me. The full moon was in his eyes and pearling his strong white teeth.
If you stay, word will get out. First there'll be a party tonight, and then, when you wake up, there'll be a damn long line of patients, yeah, waiting to see you.
I gave the boy back into Parvati's arms and wiped a hand across my face and into my hair. Looking at the people, listening to the breathing, heaving, laughing, struggling music of the slum, all around me, I remembered one of Kadarbai's favourite phrases. Every human heartbeat, he'd said many times, is a universe of possibilities. And it seemed to me that I finally understood exactly what he'd meant. He'd been trying to tell me that every human will has the power to transform its fate. I'd always thought that fate was something unchangeable, fixed for every one of us at birth, and as constant as the circuit of the stars. But I suddenly realized that life is stranger and more beautiful than that. The truth is that no matter what kind of game you find yourself in, no matter how good or bad the luck, you can change your life completely with a single thought or a single act of love.
Well, I'm out of practice sleeping on the ground, I said, smiling at Rukmabai.
You can have my bed, Kishan offered.
Oh, no, you don't, I protested.
Oh, yes, I do,
he insisted, dragging his cot from outside his hut to mine, while Johnny, Jitendra, and the others hugged and mock-wrestled me into submission, and our cries and laughter rolled away toward the time-dissolving everness of the sea. For this is what we do. Put one foot forward and then the other. Lift our eyes to the snarl and smile of the world once more. Think, act, feel. Add our little consequence to the tides of good and evil that flood and drain the world. Drag our shadowed crosses into the hope of another night. Push our brave hearts into the promise of a new day. With love, the passionate search for a truth other than our own. With longing, the pure, ineffable yearning to be saved. For so long as fate keeps waiting, we live on. God help us. God forgive us. We live on.
Acknowledgements. It took me 13 long and troubled years to write Shantaram. The first two drafts of the book, 6 years' work and 600 pages, were destroyed in prison. My hands, damaged by the residual effects of frostbite, suffered so badly during the winters in the punishment unit of the prison that many pages of the manuscript journal, which survived and which I still have with me, are stained and streaked with my blood. When I was released, the hardships were severe and unrelenting. I almost, but not quite ever, despaired of finishing the book. The fact that I did complete it, this novel written in blood and tears and exaltation that you've just read, is a testament to the help and involvement of a great many people. In making this grateful acknowledgement to them, I'm sure that unintentionally some names will be omitted from my personal honour roll. I ask those friends and colleagues to forgive me. I want to thank my manager, Tammy Michaels, for whom the true beauty of art is its passionate exaltations. My editor, Margot Rosenblum, the agent for the project, Joe Regal, the first commissioning editor in the USA, Tim Bent, and George Witt at St. Martin's Press, whose erudition, urbanity, and love for the world of the word are an artist's inspiration. I thank Jessica and Nick for their being and their forgiveness and their love. Nick, Mary, Paris, and Blaze for the wondrous gift of their faith in me. My best friend, Shula, who was always the first to read the words and to speak love for them. And my mother and my stepfather, whose unflagging moral, spiritual, and financial support, beyond what I've ever deserved or could repay, has sustained me and uplifted this work. This concludes the reading of Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts. Copyright 2003 by Gregory David Roberts. This book was read by Humphrey Bauer. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Scribe Publications and was produced in 2006 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a complete catalogue of our titles or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD and MP3 CD, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all in one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.